Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I am proud to bring you The Art of Healing, hosted by television producer, author, and teacher Kak Young. Greetings and welcome, Kak. How are you this evening?
Thank you, Hercules, very much. I'm very excited about tonight's show because we have a farmer on our show, and so is his father and grandfather before him. In fact, he has written 30 books on farming. But
wow.
One day, he was going merrily along with his life when an extraordinary event changed his life forever and along with his thinking. Tonight, we're going to hear all about his adventure, his near-death experience, his NDE. So please welcome author Philip Hashider.
Well, thank you very much, Kak, for inviting me, and it's a pleasure to speak with you. I appreciate it, and this afternoon I had the realization that there is also one person out there who I've never met that is also needing to hear my message of hope tonight. And so I thank you on behalf of myself for this opportunity and also for that person.
Well, good. Well, let's welcome that person. Hello, that person. I hope we live up to all of your expectations. Now, Philip, I want to clear up one thing here. I listened to several of your interviews, and every single host pronounced your name differently. I heard Hashider. So I want to know from you, how do we pronounce your lovely name, sir?
Well, thank you. Our family here where I live pronounces it as Hashider. It's good old German. Used to be double S, but one got dropped over the years. So it's Hashider.
Okay. All right. So Hashider, good. I love it. I had a cameraman I worked with for years, Larry Hider. So I've got the Hider part okay, but now it's Hashider. I love it. So, Philip, the percentage of people who go from farming and having 28 red Angus look up at them from their grazing to stare you in the face to a metaphysician is a pretty low number, but you seem to be among the chosen few. Tell us about your life before the life-changing event of August 5th. Now, what year was that, Philip?
It was in 2015.
2015, okay. So before 2015, give us a little rundown of what your day was like.
Well, for many people who live on a farm, one day kind of melds into the next because there are certain tasks that have to be done. So my life, I grew up on a farm. I've lived on a farm most of my life. I've worked with livestock almost all my life. And the reference you made to the beef cattle that we had was a portion of our farm after we switched from dairy cattle to beef. So most of my years were spent on a farm, working with livestock, doing what farmers normally do, harvesting, planting crops, harvesting. I worked with my father until his passing, and then I worked with my brother. And my brother still lives on the home farm, and I live on an adjacent farm. And both of these farms were owned by my father at the end of his life. One of the unique things about it, for me anyway, is that my connection to the land is very strong because of this. And I'm very privileged to be able to walk in the same footsteps where my father walked and my grandfather and his father before him.
Okay, so that involves tending to the cattle and making sure that they have enough to eat, all of that. Now, your wife, the lovely Mary, she had a job outside the farm, is that correct? And she would leave the farm and go to work.
Yes, she would. She worked at a church in downtown Madison as a director of Connecting Ministries. And so her path merged when we got married. We came from two different directions, although Mary also grew up on a farm in northwestern Wisconsin. So we both have a very strong agricultural background.
Okay, well, all right, now we're up to October 5th of 2015, and you decide that you're going to go to the gym. You're going to have a little bit of exercise that day. And tell us what happened to you, Philip.
Well, my plan, thank you. My plan was to go to our local hospital's affiliate building that housed a fitness center. I had been going there for 7 months at that point, mainly to get back in shape and lower my blood pressure, which was never really high, but there was an anomaly that they suggested that I pick up a fitness program. So that morning, it was like most every morning in the fall, I walked out to look at the cattle, and anyone who has worked with livestock or animals in general, when you work with them long enough, you can get amongst them and, well, I could pet them and talk to them and just walk around in them, and they wouldn't run away. What was unusual was that this morning is that I got within 300 feet of the group of 24 head that were lying down in the pasture. One of them saw me and jumped up, and with her ears pricked towards me, all of a sudden took off, raced across half the field, and then the others got curious and looked, and they all jumped up and looked at me, and they took off too. And so they were 1,000 feet away from me when they stopped and turned around and looked at me, it kind of like they saw a ghost. And I didn't think a whole lot about it at that point. And I turned, since everyone seemed to be okay, I turned around and walked back towards the house and then just left for the fitness center. The unusual thing about animals is that they do have an intrinsic sixth sense. I mean, anyone who's worked with animals long enough can recognize that, but I didn't pick up on it. It was just something I didn't quite focus in on that morning, mainly because I was in a hurry to get going and just kind of missed that sign that there might be something going on the rest of the day. Little did I know. So after I had, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say yes. And in your book, you say that you were seconds away from being extinguished and separated from this life. So yeah, the cows were picking up on something very strong. I mean, that might be a new profession, cow reading. You know, to see how animals sort of respond to our health problems. Anyway, all right, so you go to the gym, and you're at the gym, and then you collapse, according to your book. You collapse, and you're being revived. And that's the moment that you were seconds away from being extinguished. So you had a lot of people grabbing the machines and calling on phones and getting even more help until you were surrounded by quite a committee. And in the book, you say that you really had no experience of what was going on for 8 hours, and yet you were dead for 6 minutes, which is why you said you were seconds away from being extinguished, separated from this life. So you got the information, and you have explained it very well. You got the information by interviewing all the people who helped you during that time, and they were worried. They were very worried because you weren't coming back to life. Now, during that 6 minutes, Where did you go, Philip, and what happened?
Well, I have to mention that at one moment I was standing, looking down at my arm, standing next to an arm curl machine. I had just started, and my two forearms started tingling, and like they had fallen asleep, which I thought, that's really unusual, but that was the last thing I remember for the next at least 8 hours. Where I found myself was in a completely different dimension, and I knew it was different because of what I was seeing. One of the things I mention in my book is that it's difficult. I mean, it's easy for me to explain how I got there, what happened to me. The difficulty is finding human words to explain exactly what I was experiencing, be in a dimension that doesn't use vocabulary or word to transmit ideas between entities. It's almost instantaneous when I don't even ask a question and I have an answer before I finish asking it. So what I describe of my experience is my best explanation in using human words to describe something not of this dimension. But where I found myself was on what I can relate to as something like a raft. And I found myself floating on these waves that were coming towards me, but they weren't waves of water. They were waves of energy that I could actually see as they were coming towards me. And what surprised me is that these waves went through me. And it was at that point that I realized that I don't have a human body. So where am I? But these waves kept coming, and I kept floating, but not moving because I was anchored to that spot. So I finally looked around to see where I was, and as I looked up, in our terms of looking upwards, there was no sky, there was no clouds, there were no stars. I could say it was black, but it wasn't. It was illuminated by a golden sphere that was right in front of me. That my best description is that it was like a million suns packed into one sphere, and that it was emanating this tremendous amount of energy in all directions that we consider directions here. And it was pulsing with life. It was a golden reddish glow. And if we think of a million suns and the energy that it gives and the heat it gives off, the energy was there but not the heat, because I could reach out and actually touch it and become part of it. And so I thought, well, this is not the fitness center where I was before, so where am I? And when I reached out to touch it, I looked at what I thought were my hands, or had been my hands back here, and they were like translucent filaments, all fashioned into what my hands would have looked like back here. It was at that point that I realized, I must not be alive anymore, but I was alive. I was more alive then, at that moment, than I had ever been back here, but I didn't realize I had died. And so it was really, really confusing at that point. And so I turned around to look what was behind me, in our terminology of what's behind us. And all I could say to describe is that I was looking at eternity, and the farther I looked, the clearer it became. Now, I know that may sound contradictory, but that was what I experienced. And then all of a sudden, I was not there anymore. The one thing I not mention when I was looking at the big sun is all these little sparks coming out and flying. Not only were they flying in different directions, what I saw when I turned to look at eternity was, if I describe it as, think of our universe, everything we know here, to be within our dimension here. And if you take this dimension and you compress it down to the size of a single sheet of paper and then hang it out in space, and then next to it you hang another universe just like that, and then another dimension, another universe, another dimension, as far as you can see into eternity. And also upward, in the terms that we use upward and downward, there were all these single sheets of universes and dimensions sitting out there in infinity. So each of these were connected to a thread that wove its way back to this source of energetic light, which to me, in what my interpretation, was the source of all creation, and that's where it all came from. Some people could use the word God if they want. They could use divine creator. They could use the all-knowing. Whatever term would benefit an understanding of an intelligence far beyond anything our human brains can comprehend. So that was a portion I brought back with me when I came back and realized that I was no longer in that dimension. And you mentioned before the people who were surrounding me. In order for me to understand exactly what happened, this was, you know, several months later, I went back and interviewed each person who had a hand in saving me. And it was interesting. They were all willing to talk to me about it. They could each remember exactly what they did to me or for me. They might not have remembered what the person next to them was doing, but they could remember specifically what they did. So I relied on their testimony or their interview information to develop some sort of a timeline to understand exactly what happened to me. And that's where the 6 minutes comes in, because at the end of the medical reports that I acquired relating to all of my collapse, there was this timeline that showed that it took them a little bit over 6 minutes to restart my heart after two electrical shocks.
When you were gone, Philip, I mean, I just want to go back for a minute to where you were. So there was no pearly gates. There was no St. Peter. There was no guy sitting on a throne with a big white beard. There weren't any cherubim and seraphim, and there weren't any harps. You were in front of a big, energetic, sun-like source of energy, and you explained this as the portal of energetic transference. So, you know, I'm just fascinated as to what you felt when you were there, because you came back without fear. You say, my fears have no further power over me than what I am willing to surrender. So you had a huge metamorphosis in 6 minutes, and that changed your belief systems and changed everything you may have known before, which might have been colored by what a lot of people think about the ever after, what with the pearly gates and all. So I'm interested in how that transfiguration took place emotionally for you.
Well, for me, there were none of those things that you mentioned. Now, I'm not saying that someone else who had an NDE didn't experience that. I'm not calling that into question at all. But for me, it wasn't something I experienced or remembered. What I felt at that time was absolute love. I mean, a love that we have a small understanding of. It was far greater than whatever the greatest love you can consider you understand here. It was total acceptance. It was peace. It was very peaceful. It was total satisfaction that I didn't have to prove myself for anything. I didn't have to answer for anything I did. I was just absolutely accepted. I felt safe, safer than I've ever felt anywhere here on this planet. There was no reason for fear. I had absolutely no fear. And I came back, all of this came back with me so that I do know there is the ability to move from one dimension to another. And I liken this veil as kind of a translucent energy sheet that you can actually step through and move back and forth. Now, how do I know this? Because I experienced it. Now, some people may say, well, how do you know that's true? Well, in looking at what I experienced, and I was not breathing at this time. They were still trying to work on me to get my heart started. So how could I remember this experience if I'm not physically alive? There's only one way that I understand it, is that I could bring this back with me from one dimension to this dimension. Now, that brings me to, I like to use the analogy that of a computer. I don't believe that I brought back everything I experienced. I think I brought some of it back, and I'm hoping I can be exposed to more of it in the future, but I'm satisfied with what I did bring back. But if you have a computer like our brain, say maybe 10 gigabytes, and all of a sudden you are faced with information and knowledge that is 50 terabytes, and you try to pack it into a computer brain that's going to get 10 gigabytes of memory, well, it's probably going to crash it. So I do believe that I was only given enough information that I could transfer back with me that I could safely handle at this point in time.
Okay, and I want to give you a couple quotes from your book because I think they're just fabulous. I think that Chapter 3 is amazing, and that you write so darn beautifully well that it's just captivating. Your whole book is like an experience. It was like being present with you. So I thank you for that. But you say in your book that for the 6 minutes that you were in eternity, it took you 8 hours to reassimilate back into human life. So you named this co-residence with two dimensions. You also say, and I quote, "It seemed to me that some portions of my brain's circuitry were intentionally turned off or amped down so I could more fully realize specific parts of my experience. I had experienced a tangible link between spirit energy and human consciousness, and now I am fully aware of it." So that's how you described this situation here, being co-resident with two dimensions. I mean, my goodness, Philip, that's like the most incredible gift I've ever heard anybody being given.
Well, it was. It was an incredible gift, and it still is, because I can – it used to be that I used to have to sit down and close my eyes to experience that dimension again. I don't even have to do that anymore because it's always with me. It's always right in the background of anything I see. I do believe we can transfer between these dimensions, in not physically, but energetically and mindfully. And that would be, you know, my best explanation of what I saw and brought back. It was a real gift. And that all comes back to the question of why, for me, as I got to the point of recovering, which took, it took me quite a long time. Although I was able to physically work, it just took a long time to emotionally and mentally get myself back into this dimension. I mean, there were times when I got frustrated that I just wanted to leave again. And I didn't because I have family here. I still wanted to experience my family. But the other dimension was so wonderful, which is such a small word to explain what it was, that it seemed more inviting to leave than to stay here.
Yes. I mean, and as you describe it, as no walls, no sky, no dimensional form, no hands, just a pattern of energetic filaments and tonal threads of vibration. You said you felt like a textured hologram, a very different vibration than on this plane, and that during that 6 minutes, you had no sense of human life or connection at this point. So that's your dual residence, you know, in two dimensions. You were still alive at some degree. Your organs were still sort of working and circulating, but you were very alive in this other dimension. I mean, that's incredible, especially when you say death doesn't wait for us to come to terms with it beforehand, and yet it did for you.
Well, I was fortunate. Fortunate from the standpoint that I had such a wonderful NDE, even though I don't remember ever asking for it. And I wouldn't recommend people having a sudden cardiac death to have an NDE so they can have the same experience. But for me, it was transforming. I mean, it became the point of change for my whole life from then on. Everything changed after that. Not in the sense that I'm still here on the farm, but everything of my life and how I look at things has changed. I've just become more accepting of a lot of stuff that bugged me before. I've become more conscious of people's sufferings than I probably was before. So there comes an aspect of opening oneself up to what is available versus what I can't have. I think the biggest thing, there are a couple of things that I did really experience differently. First of all, my NDE, my sudden cardiac death in my near-death experience has taught me that the universe is love. All our choices that we make badly is not in love. But the universe wants love to be the resonance that everyone attunes to. It's a way to bring that dimension here. And I think that the ability to explain these things as to why I was given this chance was something that it took me a long time to fully understand. First of all, why did it happen, where it did, when it did? That was the biggest question I had during my recovery because it just made no sense to me. I was in a timelessness dimension, and now I'm back here where the clock runs on a 24-hour cycle, which was really hard to plug back into. The use of
yes. Did we lose you?
No, I was thinking. I was just a little bit emotionally taken back again. So sorry. Because these things are still very present in my life, even though it's been a few years. It was such a wonderful experience that when I do think back to it, and I know it's real, because when I think back to it now, I still get the same welling up of the warm energy that I had felt when I was there. And that's part of what I brought back with me. So I do know that experience is accurate. But again, as to why it happened when it did, and when I had all that help available, and why it didn't happen out in our pasture an hour earlier when I was there was really a confusing thing for me to sort through. Well, I had a couple during the next 8 months, I had during my recovery, I had a couple of indications as to what it was all about. And it happened one night when I, now this comes from my wife because I don't recall any of it. But at one point, one night, she said, I sat up in bed and I said, I don't believe it. And fortunately, Mary had a notepad with a pen beside her, so she started writing this down. And she told me about it the next morning. And she said, you know, it was really, really different because you sat up and you started talking to yourself. And I said, well, what did I say? And she said, well, a lot of it didn't make any sense until you started saying, I don't believe it. And you repeated it. And I said, well, what did that mean? She said she didn't know. But what I said then was that I had been asked to be a conduit of hope for people here. And then I said, well, that was it? She said, yeah, that's all it was. And then you laid back down and went back to sleep. Well, she telling me this the next morning, I had absolutely no recollection of that. But then at the moment she explained that to me, everything made sense. That's why I was where I was when it happened to me, where I collapsed. And not out in the field, in the pasture. I had help available. I was to have this experience, to bring it back and explain it to other people as best I could and let them decide on their own whether or not they wanted to believe it. And so that's partly why I wrote the book. Mostly it was for me to understand what happened and why it happened. And
sure.
Then it became more than that. It became something that after I showed it to Mary and a couple other very close friends, they said, this would be something that I think you need to get out into the public. So that's why it became a book. One of the things I have learned from this experience is that in affirming that what I experienced was true is the understanding that our bodies are more than the sum of its parts. By that I mean, when I was standing next to the machine, the arm curl machine, I had the same body I had as when I was lying flat on the floor with people hovering over me trying to do chest compressions to keep me going until the EMTs came. Same body, except something was missing. And that part of me that was missing, whether you call it your inner essence, your spirit, I'll use the word soul, that had gone. And that's why I was in another dimension. I was experiencing that there I couldn't tell the people back at the fitness center to stop. I was in a really nice place. But then when they finally got my heart restarted, I left that dimension and came back here into my body. Now, I didn't see that happen. It's just what happened. And then it took me over, well, again, this comes back to the medical reports. It took me over 8 hours before I really became conscious of them to what my surroundings were, and where I refer to it as I phased back in and saw that I was not in that dimension anymore. I was in an emergency room with doctors around me and Mary standing at my feet.
Now, you describe when you went away, when you took your little soul journey into the proximity of this gigantic sphere of suns, that you melded with this source, and you say that you were energetically marinated. I mean, that's just such a beautiful phrase. I think we can all understand what it would mean to be energetically marinated. And then you go on to say that it was like a warm shower after being out in the bitter cold. You felt coddled. You felt protected from other spirit energies. And then you saw those flickering sparkles of light that you told us about. And then you stood someplace in that dimension, and you saw eternity stretching out in front of you, as you described before, just forever and forever. So what about color? Did you see color?
Just from the golden sphere that was in front of me is all I remember at this point.
Okay.
Colors were... You have to remember, think of it this way. I was in an internal dimension. So that means there's an infinity aspect to it, and that you have an infinite number of what we would refer to as colors. You would have an infinite number of what we would refer to as octaves of sound. And so you have more than what we possibly can imagine here in that dimension. So if there were colors, they were colors that I didn't recognize.
Ah. You say you had kaleidoscopic vibrations, one right after another. Can you describe that?
Well, that was my attempt to answer the color pattern. Now, if you're familiar with a kaleidoscope, is where you turn it, and it changes the thing you're looking at in different shapes, colors, forms. It was like that. There were all these different ones available, moving around and moving through me. And so that's what I was referring to.
I see. And I can, you know, just imagine that our listeners are now looking for their bucket list, and they're putting up, you know, right there at the top, an NDE. They definitely want to go to this place and experience it. So there may be more people lining up behind you, Philip. Now, I loved the fact that you said, you know, during the 8 hours that it took you to reassimilate back into your body, and then you woke up and you felt a little dizzy. Well, yeah, you would be. You'd been in eternity, and you... I mean, that's kind of a crash landing coming back into your body. How did that feel? Were you worried? Were you how did you feel at the human level, feeling dizzy and probably a little disoriented?
Very disoriented. I remember the first thing I do remember was approximately 8 hours later after I collapsed. And again, that comes from the timeline through my medical reports. Now,
sure.
I was taken by ambulance. I talked to the ambulance drivers. They said I was talking to them on the way down, answering questions, joking with them. I got to the ER. And I was talking with a doctor of some sort, and Mary finally, when Mary was able to get there in the ER, she is the one who told me that I was joking with the doctor. Now, I don't remember any of this. And it took about 8 hours before I started to realize that I regained what I considered my consciousness here. And I remember looking at the wall clock in the room I was taken to, and it said 8 o'clock. And I thought, well, that can't be, because time doesn't go backwards. I was just at the fitness center at roughly 11 o'clock. And the doctor said, well, no, this is at night. So I had lost that whole aspect of time, even though I was talking with people. And none of that has come back to me to this point. And I've reconciled myself to that, that it's probably not that important that I remember those 8 hours. But it was the going from a place of timelessness back to what we have for a structured sense of time was so confusing that I just kind of kept quiet as much as I could, because I would say something and I'd get these looks like, well, you just said that 3 times before. Well, I didn't remember that I said anything. It was really disorienting, and it took quite a while to come back to this dimension's structured physics, I guess would be the best way to put it. Time, space, distances. When I had been in one that a dimension that had none of that to worry about, so it was very disorienting.
Well, I would think so, Philip. I would think so. It's
well,
pretty
one other,
extraordinary experience.
Kak, one of the other things was I've been asked how long I thought I was there. And my best answer for that is it felt at the time with timelessness, if I were going to equate that to a human timeline, I felt like I was there for centuries. It just, time just did not move. It just was. And then I come back and I find out that I was only gone for 6 minutes. It just, it was really, really confusing. And it took a while to kind of, accept that and sort it out, but I've tried my best.
Well, you say in your book that you, as a result, having had that experience, that you now move through time just one moment to the next, and that you describe your flashes of source as they show up in your life today. And can you predict when they show up, or do they just all of a sudden take you off guard and appear?
No, I make no predictions on anything anymore. They will show up when it does. I mean, even this last week, I've had that sense of disorientation to time. And this is now, 8 years later, almost 9. And I have to have a calendar now because I just can't keep time straight. And I don't think it's any sort of a mental deficiency. It's just my sense of time is much different now than it was before my collapse happened. So something in that aspect has changed, and it's something I continue to explore because I want to understand fully what happened. But I know there's a way for us to move between dimensions. And if I did not believe that, then nothing I remember would be true. And this goes to an aspect that I do believe we all have guides, or some people people may call them guardian angels. Some people may call them spirit entities. They can put whatever label they want on it. I know I have a guide, at least one. I think it's probably multiple, because I met them on two different occasions. And one of the occasions was when I was really struggling as I was writing out my thoughts to make sense of this all, was if what I did experience was true, because I didn't want to be deceived. And I wanted to know that what I experienced was really what it was. And I had this answer inside my head that, yeah, it was for me that way, which I take to mean that everyone else's is going to be different. May not be as similar to mine as anything, but it will be something they will have in their own time. And that brings up something that I really would like to mention, because I've been asked, well, what do I make of this now, of all of it? Now this time is gone, and I've written a book about it. I worked with words to try to explain it. And there, if I may, there's a couple of things that I would like to mention of how I look at all of what happened to me at this point in time. First of all, to me, the message of this golden source of energy, this source of creation, I'm going to use the word God in a non-religious sense, because we are all part of that DNA. Now, when I mentioned about the spark coming out of, that I witnessed coming out of this energy globe, they were going in all directions. They weren't coming just here to this dimension. They were going to all different dimensions. They had different pathways. And so the message of this God is love. The whole thing that is emanating from that golden sphere, the source of all creation, and the nest of creation, I've used that, is love. And it's for all of us. It's that simple. The problems that we have are here of our own making, because we simply refuse to acknowledge the divinity in another person and the love that they have and can have from us. So that was the message that I got. There are a couple other things, if I might mention it. What I experienced is that beyond this life lies another one, and another one, and another one, for all eternity. And we have no choice in that. It will happen regardless of what we think here or what we may try to do to prevent. But it's all done with love towards us from the Creator. I've used the analogy that to come here into this dimension, I took, back in 1951, I took the exit ramp of the energetic superhighway, and I came down into this dimension, and I was born of my parents. I grew up with them. I've been on this farm because of that, and that's been my life. Now, when my body uses up all of its fuel, which it will, and I will physically cease to exist, that spark within me is going to get back onto the energetic superhighway, and I'm going to go to another dimension, and I'm going to do something else, and I'm going to keep going, because that inner essence of me is not ever going to die. It will just be transformed and move to another experience.
Well, if I can just say a couple of things here. One is that I hope everybody reads this book. I mean, everybody in the world, because I think it's just brilliant and it's amazing. And speaking of love, the readers will fall in love with your wife, Mary, just like I did. And I want to just quote you one more time. In your book, you say, "When I leave again, I will still exist as the full essence of my truest self. My body is simply the framework that allows the inner me, the spirit me, the essence me, the eternal me, to maneuver within and participate with this physical world. At the center of this innermost part of my being is the core of who I am and what I will always be. The self-identification I have taken as a body called Philip is only one part of my total essence, and the same is true for everyone else." So, Philip, I'm going to give you the next couple of minutes to tell us what you learned, how you are different now, and what you want to leave the readers with, our listeners with, and the readers.
Okay. Well, I'm going to start with what I want them to take with them is that death is nothing to fear. But also, I'm going to flip that, life is nothing to fear either because we are eternal beings. We contain the DNA of the Creator, and that is not going to be destroyed. So whether we are in a human form or an energetic form, we will still exist as our parents, our friends who have passed and left us, family members, that they all exist, but not necessarily within our physical sight. So in essence, that gives us all hope. That there is nothing to fear about what comes next.
Well, everybody can find your book, certainly on Amazon, and I believe other entities too. They just need to Google 6 minutes in eternity, or so, whatever your search browser is. 6 minutes in eternity by Philip Hossheider, and he is an extraordinary human being and someone that we should definitely keep hearing from, because I think your message is global, and I hope your book is translated into every language on the planet, and I hope you keep doing these talk shows and spreading your absolutely loving and lovely message, Philip. You are a blessing to our planet.
Well, thank you, Keck. That's very humbling. I had an extraordinary experience, and I'm pleased to share it, and I'm hoping that it is a vehicle of hope for people who don't think there is any or can't find it, that this is not the end. It's you know, I'm just another human being. I'm not a saint. I'm not a prophet. I just had an extraordinary experience that I've tried to translate into human language for others to study. Now, I'm not saying everyone has to believe it, but I would ask people to put their hands out in an open, accepting way of receiving, even if they don't quite believe it. Because I think it can be transformative, because these dimensions are for us to experience. That's one reason we come here, is to learn things. And our essence has to take the form of a human body, because that's what our species is here. So whether we transform into something else later, I have no idea. But we can take comfort in knowing that we come here to learn and experience, and our essence, our soul, has to use the body to do that, because it can't possibly experience the same things we do in a tactile way of this dimension by itself.
People can reach you. You have a Facebook page at philiphushheiderbooks@gmail.com is how they can send you an email. They also can look you up and your 30 books if they need to know how to begin, how to buy and run a farm. They can certainly look at your books of how to. You've covered pretty much everything all the way down to jerky. So, Philip, you are a definite source of farm information. You are a definite source of eternal information, and I just want to know what your next book is going to be, and do you think you'll ever be able to teach people how to go from this dimension to the next and come back?
Oh, two really good questions. I haven't considered myself much of a teacher, so we'll see if that comes up as a possibility. My next book, so far that hasn't come into view yet. It hasn't surfaced. So perhaps a second book relating to this, because there are things that I could elaborate on more. I mean, the book was long enough as it was, so there were limits as to what I could really expound upon. One thing we haven't mentioned, and if I have a moment, I would like to say that for anyone who has had an NDE or an experience like that, it's usually more, it's as affected on spouses, partners, family members who often have no idea what the person experienced. And so there's a portion in the book that I talk about the struggles that Mary and I had of finding common ground, because I had,
yes,
had this extraordinary experience, and she had no idea what I was talking about. Well, from the standpoint, she couldn't experience it, but she saw me in the ER room, and I couldn't understand her experience because I wasn't there.
Well, Philip, we are out of time, and I do have to turn the show back over to our producer. So I just want to make sure I say thank you to you for being part of this. Thank you for writing the book, and I really hope you write another one about your flashbacks and how that is changing your life. I think the interesting parts for a lot of people is how that has changed you in this lifetime, and I can't wait to read anything you write. I think you're extraordinary. And on that, I will say thank you again. It's been a joy speaking with you. And Hercules, I turn this back over to you. And thank you for the opportunity of being on the air and talking to fantastic people like Philip.
And thank you, Kat, and thank you, Philip, for an awesome show. It was very thought-provoking and inspiring. And thanks to our wonderful audience for tuning in. Until next time, joyous journeys, amazing adventures, and a healthy and happy new year. Good night, all. Good night, all.